Coming up on Golf Today, we welcome back Chevron defending champ Patty Tavitanikit live from Mission Hills Country Club. Talk about her rise from UCLA to major champ to rookie of the year. And what are her plans this week to go back-to-back? And we'll go live to Augusta, Georgia to get you ready for this week's Augusta National Women's Amateur. Interviews, analysis, insight into year three of this blossoming tradition. And on the eve of the Masters, who needs a great, large, Texas-sized week in San Antonio where players are looking for form, momentum, and a brand new pair of boots? Giddy up, it's Tuesday, and it's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
We begin today with some major news. 13 months after a single car accident nearly cost him his right leg, Tiger Woods flew to Augusta, Georgia this morning, 1 week and 2 days out from the opening round of the 86th Masters. As reported by Bob Herrig of Sports Illustrated, Woods is at Augusta National Golf Club right now to play a practice round and gauge whether he is fit to compete in the Masters next week. Woods arrived at the course Tuesday morning alongside his son, Charlie. A look at the Tiger timeline of late involved in that accident in Los Angeles, February of 2021 and May of that year, said post-crash injuries and rehab had been an entirely different animal. Posted that 3-second video on November 21st, 2021 of him hitting a golf ball on the range and of course finished runner-up with son Charlie at the PNC Championship on December 19th, 2021. And yes, on the grounds of Augusta National Golf Club as we speak. Welcome to our studio, Damon Hack, alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. This game is very hard to figure out day to day. This is a story I did not expect to be talking about this afternoon.
Yeah, Damon, it may be true that the Masters doesn't begin until the back nine on Sunday, but the public interest begins in it a lot earlier, and it's really gone into overdrive today with the prospect that seemed so unlikely even a few months ago that we would actually see Tiger Woods tee up at Augusta National in the Masters. And I guess we'll have a determination on whether or not he's physically able to do that fairly soon.
He's always kind of downplayed, you know, the ability that he has even. You know, I've won four straight majors. I've had a pretty good career. What does this tell you that considering everything that Tiger Woods has been through physically, mentally, emotionally, that he still believes he's going to at least test out his leg to compete potentially next week against the best players in the world?
It tells you something very significant, I believe, here. We've seen Tiger have this kind of Hamlet, will he, won't he thing with the Masters before and whether or not he's able to play in 2016 and in 2017. And in neither of those cases did he do what he's doing today, which is go there for a physical stress test on the tournament course under, in his mind, tournament conditions. Can he physically withstand what it is? And to me, it's not just that he's trying to find out, is he physically healthy? That tells you something even more important, that Tiger believes the swing is good enough to play. All he needs to know now is the body. He thinks he can win, Damon. That's why he's there now figuring out if the body can work, because he believes the swing is good enough to do the rest.
Doesn't it tell you also that just great champions do not change? Jack Nicklaus, into his 50s, went to Augusta National not to shake hands, but to try to win a seventh green jacket. Arnold Palmer would tweak his golf clubs, not just because he was bored, but to try to find a secret in this incredibly difficult, challenging game. Doesn't this tell you that Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods, whether he's 26 or 46 or 66?
Yeah, he may be a lion in winter, but he's still a lion out there, Damon. He's got a broken body that's in the process of healing. His game has left him on and off over the years, but he's still Tiger Woods from the neck up, and every other person in that field knows when Tiger Woods is on the leaderboard with them.
And what about the hysteria, social media standpoint, what we've seen this morning? This is already a major talking point. It's the biggest talking point. You know, suddenly we go from Hideki trying to go back-to-back or Rory trying to complete the career Grand Slam to Tiger Woods' plane took off this morning from Jupiter to go to Augusta.
He's already won the PIP Award for this year, and it's not even April yet.
Story will continue to follow as this Tuesday unfolds. Our Rex Hoggard also been reporting Tiger being at Augusta as well. Now, big week in the women's game as we get ready for the first major of the year, the Chevron Championship at Mission Hills Country Club in Rancho Mirage, California. October of 2021, the tournament secured a six-year sponsorship deal with Chevron that will increase the purse to $5 million this year. For next year, the event is expected to move to the Houston, Texas area, ending a stay in Palm Springs that began with the tournament's debut in 1972. Of course, it was elevated to a major in 1983. The purse increased from $110,000 in 1972 to $5 million in present day. Three players have won it three times. In fact, three members of the World Golf Hall of Fame, Amy Alcott, Betsy King, and Annika Sorenstam. Annika, the only one to go back-to-back in 01 and 02. For more, we welcome in Amy Rogers from Mission Hills on this Tuesday. Amy, it's great to see you, first of all. What's the energy like on the ground knowing this is the last time we'll see this major played at Mission Hills?
Well, Damon, this is it. After 50 years, the final playing of the Chevron Championship gets underway here at Mission Hills Country Club. And the one word that I keep hearing as I talk to players is bittersweet. While players are thrilled to have Chevron come on board and to breathe new life into this major championship, they're also sad to be saying goodbye to the traditions here at Mission Hills Country Club, particularly that traditional winner's leap into Poppy's Pond. And I've heard so many players over the years refer to this as sort of their Masters, where they get to come back year after year. Now, when Chevron came on board as title sponsor in October 2021, they also announced that they would be moving this championship. It will be moving to the Houston, Texas area, which is closer to Chevron's headquarters, but what the new home of the Chevron Championship will be has yet to be announced.
Amy, what have you noticed in terms of how the players have been preparing this week for the first major of the season?
Eamon, last week I had a chance to speak with quite a few players at the JTBC Classic about their preparations for this major championship. And while many of the players were hyper-focused on what they were doing last week in Carlsbad, many of them said that their focus would change immediately come Sunday. One of those players was Leona McGuire, a first-time winner earlier this year. She said, in fact, she did a lot of her preparations several weeks ago. Because she has been able to play this venue several times throughout her career, she was able to do that and thus make this week's major championship a lot easier for her. When I asked Danielle Kang how she was preparing, she was honest as always and flat out told me, you know what? I am using the JTBC Classic as a warm-up. She was using it as an opportunity to assess her game, where it was at. She wanted to, you know, fine-tune a few things, particularly her short game. And she told me she really wanted to be able to come into this major championship with a lot of confidence. Now, for someone like NB Park, a seven-time major champion who has won here at Mission Hills Country Club, she decided to start her season a little bit earlier than usual. So she comes here to Mission Hills Country Club, where she's making her sixth start of the year, and says she no longer feels rusty. She says she feels completely warmed up and ready to go for the season's first major.
Going to be a fantastic week at Mission Hills, an emotional one, one final leap into Poppy's Pond. Great to have Amy Rogers on the ground for us on this Tuesday. So, folks, let's take a look at the outright odds this week, powered by PointsBet Sportsbook. And you see Jin Young Ko, not just a favorite, but a heavy, heavy Tiger Woods-esque prime hide of power favorite.
Yeah, you see a lot of the other elite players like Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, Lexi Thompson. They're all pretty tightly bunched there, but Jin Young Ko in the bets, as in golfins in general.
Has she earned that? I mean, 34 straight rounds under par. She's already won this season. You know, her T4 last week was her off week, apparently. Does she deserve that type of favoritism and that type of hype and expectation, considering Lydia Ko has won this season, Danielle Kang as well, NB Park, a past champion and a seven-time major champion in her own right?
Yeah, but NB Park's a long way removed from her last major victory. Lydia Ko has won once this year. She obviously won in Saudi Arabia in November as well. Danielle Kang has won once this year. Jin Young Ko's won six of her last 11 starts. You've got to go all the way back to last summer and to find when she was more consistently finishing outside the top 10 in the tournament. Only once since last summer has she been outside the top 10. So that level of consistency alone, plus her record here, she won this tournament in 2019. She has a good track record on this course. She is right now peerless in the game. It's hard to imagine the bookies could think any other way.
And also inviting the attention and inviting the scrutiny and the expectation, saying, you know, this is not even my best
golf. You know, the best is yet to come. That's pretty powerful in this game where you're playing with a crooked stick and a dimpled ball.
Well, we've also heard recently Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy make the same noises, and these are guys who have four majors in their rearview mirror at this point. Anyone who's competing at that level is always going to tell you their best golf is ahead. We think our best golf is ahead.
Foolishly. I do. Well, if not Jin Young Ko, who this week?
I'm going to let the heart rule the head.
Okay.
This week. I think Lexi Thompson.
Really?
This is by far Lexi's best major. It's the only one she's actually won back in 2014. But she's had four other finishes in the top five since she won here in 2014. She had that hideous experience 5 years ago when she got a four-stroke penalty from an infraction the day before while she was playing in the final round on her way to the 12th tee. And she hung in there, eventually lost a playoff. But she has all of the tools for this game except the shortest club in the bag. And that's, to me, the test of Lexi this week. If the putter is good enough, I would expect Lexi Thompson to make a really great run at a tournament where she's got a lot of great memories and be the last one to jump into the water before they move to Houston.
It would be quite a full circle moment for her. I'm going with someone who got the better of Lexi Thompson last year at the Olympic Club in San Francisco. That, of course, is Yuka Saso, major championship winner, someone who hits the ball a long way, makes eagles, makes birdies. She is an explosive player, and I believe that she is someone who's just coming into her own, starting to see her on television commercials as well. Originally from the Philippines, claims dual citizenship with Japan as well. I think she has the game. I think she has the temperament to make that final leap into Poppy's Pond come Sunday.
And she's still only, what, 20 years old? 21 years old? So the pressure of two major titles by then, that's a pretty high bar to set for someone.
These kids do the darndest thing. We're seeing it more and more in the great game of golf. Well, folks, another fantastic event in the women's game gets started tomorrow with the third edition of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. 72 of the world's top female amateurs converge on Georgia for a chance at a final round at Augusta National. And for the folks who don't know, the format field of 72 players, 54-hole stroke play tournament. Top 30 through 36 holes make the cut for the final round. The first two rounds, of course, at Champions Retreat Golf Club, and the final round at Augusta National Golf Club, as we hear from some of the players and what they're most looking forward to.
I mean, I think it's like, you know, the biggest event that you can play as an amateur. And maybe one of the biggest even in women's golf. I think it's such a cool event, and I really look forward to coming back every single year.
Oh, it means so much, just given the tradition of Augusta National without even allowing women to play. And having this prestigious women's amateur tournament just means so much, especially for, like, little girls who, like, might watch the tournament and then might see us, and it really inspires, like, the next generation.
It's incredible what Augusta's done for the women's game, just showcasing it and putting it on a national stage. I'm sure it's inspired so many young women to get into the game, and you know, it's great representation. You can't see what you can't be, or you can't be what you can't see, and Augusta's really given women the chance to shine on a national stage, and it's just incredible.
I think it's a great experience that we have an opportunity to play this event because of all the history the Master has, both men's and now the one we're creating as women. And it's a feeling that I can't really put into words, but it's just amazing.
And our own Steve Burkowski joins us now from Champions Retreat. Burko, what's your perspective being in Augusta this week?
Well, Damon, thrilled to be back here for the third edition of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. When I made the journey to Georgia yesterday, hard not to think about the previous two editions in 2019, the inaugural event. If you pick two women to be in that final group on Augusta National Golf Club Saturday with that title up for grabs, Jennifer Kupcho, Maria Fassi, two of the very best in college and women's amateur golf, putting on a great display of golf and sportsmanship along the way. Kupcho ultimately prevailing with that 31 on the second nine coming in. And then a year ago, where you had about a half dozen women in the mix on that second nine Saturday at Augusta National. So we have been treated to two amazing and very different finishes on that final day at Augusta National Golf Club. And you just heard those women talk about it. It wasn't their experience necessarily. It is the experience of growing the game, having young girls at home watching what could be possible. I thought that was very telling sound from these women earlier today, that it wasn't necessarily about them. It was the experience as a whole and how it can continue to grow the game moving forward.
Let's focus on that bigger picture, Steve. In that broader sense, where is the Augusta National Women's Amateur now as it heads into its third installment?
Well, you heard Emma Spitz say it, Eamon. It perhaps is the very biggest and most prestigious tournament in all of women's amateur golf, if not all of women's golf. And I go back to April 4, 2018, when Fred Ridley, the chairman of Augusta National Golf Club, shared the news of the creation of this event. When things happen, it usually takes time, maybe years, maybe decades, to promote the game and build some history and tradition. Not here. I believe this is an outlier in such a very positive mood in terms of these young women. They cannot wait to get that invitation. We have seen it on social media throughout the years when they go to the mailbox and they receive the invitation to play in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It is truly remarkable what has happened in nearly 4 years' time since Chairman Ridley making that announcement saying, hey, it is our responsibility to help grow the game in the legacy of Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts, to continue to promote it at all levels, and to see that from 2018 where it is now in 2022, simply remarkable. And I think it's only going to get bigger and better.
Well, Berko, you got some newbies, you got some veterans. Who are some names to watch?
Damon, I think experience and a comfort level is going to be huge here over the next 3 or 4 days. You've got 22 women in the field that were here a year ago, and of that group, 9 played in 2019 in the inaugural event. So I think that comfort level of knowing what it is all about, especially when you make it to Augusta National, will serve these women well. And really no surprise to start with the top-ranked amateur in the world, Rose Zhang. She is there for a reason, a freshman at Stanford. She won her first 3 college events in the fall, had a great chance to win here a year ago, ultimately finishing tied for third. And then right below her in the World Amateur Golf Rankings, Ingrid Lindblad, the Swede from LSU. She's a junior who just won her 8th career collegiate event this past weekend at the Clemson Invitational. She, too, was in the mix on that Saturday on the second 9 at Augusta National. I think 2 of the very heavy favorites. Not really going out on a limb with those 2. Maybe a couple of other names to keep an eye on. How about Beatrice Vollen from Florida State? She is the only player to finish in the top 10 in both the 2 previous editions, certainly looking to make it 3 for 3. Then how about Amelia Miliaccia? What an intriguing storyline. Falling in a playoff a year ago, a remarkable journey for the standout at Wake Forest, who's been spending some time with us on our college and amateur broadcast. We're going to do a little deep dive with Amelia a little bit later. She's going to join us in the next hour. But those are just a few of the very talented women who I think have a very good chance here this week.
All right, looking forward to that chat. Steve Burkowski with all the angles of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And folks, we're just getting started on this Tuesday. After the break, we're joined by LPGA Tour Commissioner Molly Marcoux-Simon as we get set for the first major championship of the year.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the Pro XC, experience the best. And by Liberty Mutual Insurance, only pay for what you need. Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
In May of 2021, Molly Marcoux-Simon was unanimously selected by the LPGA Board of Directors to become the tour's 9th commissioner. In August, Marcoux-Simon officially took over for Mike Wan after his 11-year tenure. And here are some notable changes on the LPGA Tour under Molly Marcoux-Simon's tenure. The 2022 schedule features 34 events with a record-breaking $85.7 million in prize money. Some notable purse increases this year, the CME Group Tour Championship up to $7 million, the AIG Women's Open to $6.8 million, and the Chevron Championship this week, boosted by 60% to $5 million. There's also a new 5-year agreement with the Epson Tour, guaranteeing minimum purses of $200,000, and a behind-the-scenes all-access show, which debuted in January. We're pleased now to welcome in Molly Marcoux-Simon from Mission Hills. And Molly, you've been on the job 7 months. I'm curious, what are you pleased that you've made the most progress on at this point? And by the same token, what are you disappointed that you haven't made more headway on at this stage?
Yeah, well, also, you know, the purses are now, first of all, great to see you guys and thrilled to be on with you. But the purse is now at $90.2 million. So we've even made progress since our announcement. And I think that's been the thing that everyone's been, I think, most excited about is the partner interest, and both from our current partners and new partners sort of saying, hey, it's the LPGA's time. We've got great momentum. People are really interested in women's golf. People are really interested in our players. People are really interested in just the LPGA. So I think I'm just really happy with that. I think we have a lot of room for growth still, but I think that the interest in us from all sorts of partners around the industry as well as our corporate partners is really, really strong. I think, you know, in terms of our other initiatives, we've been putting together a pretty aggressive strategic plan, and we've got six pillars that we're working off of, and everybody's sort of aligned around those pillars, from the players to our board to, you know, to our staff. And so it just takes a little while to get all those things done. You know, we're specifically looking at next year's schedule and how the flow of tournaments can work really well for our players, sort of what's the environment within which they compete, you know, and again, growing all of those partnerships so our the bottom of our tour can, you know, make a living that's commensurate with their talents. So we're doing really quite well at the top, but we really want those players, you know, 60 to 120, 130 to be able to make money when they make a cut and to be able to, you know, live a life that's, as I said, commensurate with being the very best in the world.
Molly, I spoke to Judy Rankin yesterday on Golf Central. She said she was already a little more emotional than she expected to be at this point. What is your hope for this final week as the LPGA says goodbye to Mission Hills?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, saying goodbye to Judy, too. I mean, obviously, she'll hopefully be around a bit, but she's just so remarkable. I've grown to have such a love and fondness for her. She's just a great role model. But I think, you know, we had the Champions Dinner with some of the past champions, names that people that I grew up watching and idolizing. And, you know, they all understand and think this is a great move and are really super grateful for Chevron's partnership with us. But, you know, it's hard to walk away from tradition. I mean, this is my first time here. It's absolutely gorgeous. The people here over the 50 years of us playing this tournament have embraced the LPGA. I remember watching as a kid and, you know, knowing every year that this tournament was going to be on, it felt like it really mattered. You know, it felt like women's sports mattered. It felt like the LPGA mattered. And so there's great history here. And, you know, when you go back and look at all the big moments, just even from Pernilla's win in 2018 on Monday and, you know, Brittany Lincecum chipping in for making eagle to win. And, you know, there's just so many great stories. And I think the LPGA is about tradition and about history. So we're hoping that we can continue to enjoy this week and capture and remember some of those great moments, but also work with our great new partner. I mean, how amazing is Chevron? They're really doubling down on their investment, just like this tournament has represented. You know, they're going to be a leader in what we do. And so we're really looking forward to working with them. They've been phenomenal so far. You know, they're really committed to elevating this tournament and elevating the LPGA. So we're enjoying the tradition and the history, but we're moving forward as well.
Molly, you mentioned working on the flow of the schedule for the LPGA Tour. There was a month-long break between early February and early March where there were no events on the calendar, and a six-week stretch where there were no events in the United States at all. Should we expect to see more sponsors, more events as you roll out the pillars that you're working on?
I think that, you know, we're working on that flow, as you said. I mean, I think there's not a specific number we're looking for. We want to elevate the, you know, the purses of the lower events if we can, but we do want the flow to work for our players, you know, from a geographic standpoint as well as a timing standpoint, you know, where they get the breaks, you know, where the tournaments are located near each other, how we travel abroad. I think those are all things that are really our number one pillar, is to look at that schedule and drill down on it. And, you know, some of it's within our control, some of it we need you know, help from others, but I think that's front and center in our priority list.
Molly, speaking of the schedule, Jon Rahm has been vocal about having a mixed event, you know, PGA Tour players and LPGA Tour players together. How much momentum is there for such a format?
I mean, I think everybody wants to do that, and I think one of the first things, you know, I thought about as I was taking this job and then talking to so many people, I think for years people have talked about it. I think golf is the perfect sport for men and women to play together. I mean, when you look at the Olympics, you know, they're playing the same course, the same time, just slightly different tees, and the scores were all the same. You know, I think the KPMG performance insights that we have really show how talented our players are, and I think people would love to see the men and women play together. I think the men on the tour are very supportive of our women. The PGA Tour has been extremely supportive of, you know, the LPGA in my time, and we're working really closely with them. So I think we'd all like to see that happen. I think the details and the logistics are always challenging. We've got schedules on the books, they've got schedules, but I think there's a commitment to try to make something happen, and I think the world would love to see that, and I know our players would love it.
Ollie, we hear a lot of chatter in golf these days about the possibility of rival tours and even the world's best golfers being used for the purposes of sports washing. And we're actually seeing that on the Ladies European Tour. Are you concerned at all that the LPGA Tour is in any way vulnerable to that kind of movement, or are you confident in the model you have?
I'm confident in the model that we have, but I mean, I think we have to, you know, we have to always look at ourselves and say, like, how can we make the tour, the best that it can possibly be, with which includes, you know, obviously, as I talked about before, the purse sizes, the geographic flow, but also the format of our events. I mean, I'm very, very bullish on where we're going and where our partners are and how committed they are to what we're doing. So I think you just have to, you know, keep our head down and keep plugging forward and listening to our players. Honestly, this is their tour. They tell us what they need and what they want. And so we're really open to that. You know, I think one of our other pillars is how do we provide that perfect environment or that right environment for our players to be able to reach peak performance, which includes, you know, the amenities that they have at the tournaments. It includes other ways that we market them and get them out into the media and ways that we just support them. And one of the things I love about this job is that really my job is to support the players and make sure that they have all the opportunities that they deserve being the very best in the world. So I'm really bullish on it. I think, you know, we always want to provide the best playing opportunities for our members. It's a membership organization.
Molly, in the business world, some say that diversity equals growth. How well is the LPGA positioned to be a leader in the movement for greater diversity in golf?
Yeah, I mean, again, when we talk about our pillars, one of our pillars is to change the face of golf. And I think the LPGA has always been a leader in obviously providing opportunities for women and really for women in sports. If you think about being around for 71 years, being a professional sports organization for 71 years and really had on our own had a great deal of success. There's obviously been some highs and some lows. So I think we're a model for what a women's sports organization can be. But now we're kind of diving into other aspects of diversity, sort of, you know, racial diversity, socioeconomic diversity. One of the things that we're really trying to do is integrate all parts of our organization. So we have the LPGA Foundation, which includes the USGA LPGA Girls Golf Program. We have 500 sites around the country and some around the world. So we're really diving in and saying, well, how can we provide this game to people who otherwise might not have felt welcome in the game or might not have felt like they had the resources to play? And that is extremely important to me personally. I think that sports are a mechanism for growth in people. They build communities, they build leaders. And so it's really our responsibility to give this amazing game to people who have not otherwise felt welcome or included. And so it is a huge part of our mission going forward. And we think we've got the platform to be able to do it with both our girls golf program, with our amazing LPGA professionals, and with our LPGA amateurs. And then you add that with the LPGA tour, and that integration, I think, will allow us to be a leader in this space. And we're really, again, excited about it and think there's huge opportunity for us in that space.
Well, Molly, I know it's going to be a special week. Enjoy that sunshine at Mission Hills. Thank you for your time, and we hope to speak to you soon.
Yeah, guys, keep in touch. I love your show, and look forward to hearing from you.
Appreciate that. Commissioner of the LPGA, Molly Marcoux-Simon. Meanwhile, we get an update on the Epson Tour, the road to the LPGA. This week, the tour heads to Tucson, Arizona, for the Casino del Sol Golf Classic. This is just the second year of the event.
Well, over on the PGA Tour, the Texas Two-Step is continuing. Off the match play in Austin, the tour has moved on to San Antonio for the Valero Texas Open. Some big guys in the field this week, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Bryson DeChambeau, they're all searching, but which one of them needs to find some form this week? We'll discuss when we come back.
Back on Golf Today, this year marks the 100th anniversary of the first playing of the Valero Texas Open. This event provides the backdrop as the game's top players play their final event before the Masters Tournament, the first major of the year, which is next week. And with the winner of this tournament earning a spot into the Masters, provided he is not already exempt. So how about some notables in the field this week also playing in the Masters? Bryson looking for form and some health. Hideki, of course, the defending Masters champ. You got Zach Johnson, who's won in Texas, and he's won the Masters. Rory trying to get that career grand slam. Jordan Spieth, of course, the defending champ in San Antonio. And then you got some notables not in the Masters. Richard Bland had a terrific week, I thought, in Texas. Amen?
Yeah, narrowly missed out, but I guess if you're fighting for that place in the Masters during the match play, the last guy you want to see standing across from you is Dustin Johnson, and that's what held him back. But, you know, there's two very recent, or comparatively recent, former major champions.
Yeah.
Rick Stenson in 2016, Jason Day 2015.
Got some former number ones on this list. So who needs a big week in your mind in San Antonio, Texas?
How could it not be Bryson? I mean, a year ago this week, Bryson was number five in the official world golf rankings.
Yeah.
Right now, he's 15th. And we are now 88 days into 2022. And what does Bryson DeChambeau have to show for his season? Is he was credited with a tie for 58th at the match player, where he got a half point out of three matches. And it's very difficult to see how Bryson is not the guy who needs most kind of positivity to come out of this week, because he hasn't seen very much of it. And frankly, he's going to a tournament where he hasn't had much positivity in the past. And I tend to attribute it to the fact that Augusta National has never permitted the green reading books that Bryson tended to use as a Bible on the golf course until they were banned at the start of this season, but they were never allowed at Augusta. And that's why I think in four starts as a pro, Bryson's best finish is a tie for 29th. So he's played 16 rounds at Augusta National, and nine of them have been over par. It's a place where he struggled consistently. So he really desperately needs form before he gets there, because right now he doesn't have anything.
At the height of his power, he's the greatest showman. You know, he's our outside-the-box thinker in golf. He's our envelope pusher. When he's inside the big tent, we can't take our eye off him. But he is not at 100%, maybe not even 75%, at least in terms of his form and how he's playing the game. And it has to be frustrating for a player. I talked to Mike Shy, one of his coaches, about a year ago, and asked him the significance of a U.S. Open. He said, Damon, it's about the U.S. Open, it's about the Masters, and it's about the Invitationals. Those are the tournaments that mean the most to Bryson DeChambeau. And here we are on the eve of the 86th Masters, and he does not have form. He does not have a resume, really, at Augusta National either. It's a tournament he desperately wants to win and wants to contend. And you really want to go into that tournament feeling good about your body, feeling good about your game. And I think it's a shame just for us as golf talkers that he is not at the height of his power.
He's not, and he hasn't been since last August when he lost that epic playoff to Patrick Cantlay in the Northern Trust out at Liberty National. And it's fine to say that the Masters is a priority for Bryson, but we kind of need to see some evidence that his career on the PGA Tour is a priority. I mean, last year was a year of gimmicks and sideshows and distractions for Bryson, but it was great theatre to watch from our point of view, and it ended with great theatre when he appeared at the Professional Long Drive Association Championship in Las Vegas. But Bryson has entered another long drive event in Jupiter, Florida, to be held the week after the Masters. Now, this is a guy who's talked in some detail last week with Todd Lewis out in Austin about the hand injury that he suffered from and the long-term dangers it poses in terms of trying to avoid surgery. As a solution to that, a guy who's serious about his career is not going to be entering into a long drive championship, which puts an enormous amount of stress on vulnerable parts of the body a week after the Masters. I guess we should be grateful it's a week after the Masters and not the week beforehand. But to me, he's going down this road of getting into these kind of little cul-de-sac distractions that are great theatre. It's what he's passionate about and interested in. I worry about it in terms of his long-term viability on the PGA Tour.
Sounds like you're saying he's not Bo Jackson, he's not Deion Sanders, able to pull off kind of a two-sport career. Do you think that he is too distracted? Because I do think that he has such an active mind. That's just how he goes about his business. And this kind of dipping his toe into the world of long drive is just kind of emblematic of who he is as a person. Scientific, looking for edges and looking for things to keep his busy mind occupied.
Well, that's how he's gotten as good as he is at the game, this constant searching for something better and very frequently achieving what's something better. But I think he's got to be careful in terms of having some kind of governing rails on where this distraction is. And that means don't get distracted too much into the sideshows of long drive. And don't poke people like Brooks Koepka on Twitter who are going to poke you back, because that just turns into a longer-lasting distraction that maybe you're not best matched for in terms of this kind of social media toxicity. I think he needs a little bit more focus on what really matters and what's going to define him. Coming up on the second hour of Golf Today, we'll have the reigning Chevron champion in the house. Patty Tavatanakit joins us to talk about her defining win and her chances of being the first woman in 20 years to go back-to-back in the season's first major. Emiliana Migliaccio has played in every edition of the Augusta National Women's Amateur and lost a playoff last year. She's back, she's one of the favourites, and she's looking to go one better in 2022. We'll hear from the Wake Forest standout. And last year's Valero Texas Open fueled a resurgence for Jordan Spieth, but lately he looks like he's running on fumes. We'll assess Spieth's chances of finding something worth even more than a full tank of gas. Precious confidence as he heads toward the Masters.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Good afternoon. Some major news today. 13 months after a single car accident nearly cost him his right leg, Tiger Woods flew to Augusta, Georgia this morning, 1 week and 2 days out from the opening round of the 86th Masters Tournament. As reported by Bob Herrig of Sports Illustrated, Woods is at Augusta National Golf Club right now to play a practice round and gauge whether he is fit to compete in the Masters next week. Woods arrived at the course Tuesday morning alongside his son Charlie, who was spotted hitting balls in the tournament practice area. Justin Thomas in attendance as well. We take a look at this Tiger Woods timeline involved in that accident last year in Los Angeles. In May of 2021, said post-crash that the injuries had been an entirely different animal in terms of his rehabilitation. Posted a three-second video on November 21st, 2021 of him hitting that golf ball that set Twitter ablaze, finished runner-up with his son Charlie at the PNC Championship in December, and of course on the grounds of Augusta National Golf Club today. Welcome back to Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch. And Eamon, we have been covering Tiger Woods for a long time. What do you make of this latest wrinkle in the life of a 15-time major champion?
There's a certain desperation among every golf fan to hope for the best in this kind of scenario, Damon, and we all want to see Tiger Woods teeing it up 9 days from now at Augusta National. And this is a new strategy for Tiger. We've been here before where we see this Hamlet routine of will he, won't he. And he's announced in 2016 and in 2017 he wasn't going to play the Masters. And in both cases, he did so on the Friday preceding tournament week. This is the first time he's gone to Augusta to test if physically he can do it, to basically stress test his body and see if it can withstand the rigors of what is a notoriously hilly golf course,
yeah,
much less the rigors of actual tournament play, regardless of the terrain that he's on. So I think it's a huge leap that he's gone there to do that. But what I draw from this is that Tiger is in a position where he believes his swing is good enough to compete and potentially win. He's not going there to shoot a couple of 78s and head home on Friday night. That's not in Tiger Woods' wiring and makeup. He's going there thinking he can compete. The only question is, can the body do it? Because he clearly thinks that the swing can.
Yeah, we don't know if he's going to compete yet next week at the 86th Masters. We've been covering him for so long. Have you learned anything new about Tiger Woods in the last year? I mean, the conventional wisdom was at 46, you can't even do this. The body is too old. The back surgeries that he's had, the comebacks that he's continued to find a way, whether it's from injury or short game woes, to just win a 15th major and fifth green jacket. But it seems like even now, in 2022, we're learning something new about Tiger Woods.
Well, this is a tournament where we've previously seen a 46-year-old written off and been told that he's past it, he can't do it anymore. And that turned out to be perhaps one of the most iconic moments in the history of this game. Tiger Woods is clearly still Tiger Woods from the neck up, regardless of how compromised he has been over the years from the neck down in terms of his physical health. He is still very much Tiger Woods. And I still think if Tiger Woods' name appears on that leaderboard over the weekend, I still think it's enough to put fear in the guys around him. We saw that on the back nine Sunday in 2019 when there was just a plethora of guys in contention to win and only one of them didn't blink. And it was the guy who had the least basis for that kind of confidence that week because he'd been so physically out of it for so long. And, you know, he's no different. He's still Tiger Woods now. He still thinks he can win.
He is no different, but he also has Charlie kind of riding shotgun in this story. Kind of Tiger.
You think Charlie's egging him on?
I think so. I think that's part of this story, that Tiger has a renewed love of this game through his son and their time together in Orlando at the PNC Championship. And Tiger has always taken not just the long view in terms of his family and what his kids mean to him, but also the long view in terms of what he can do in his 40s and 50s. He is the one who brings up the names of Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson, the greatest of all time, to continue to be successful in their later years. I mean, we are the ones, you know, the collective, we kind of putting constraints on what is possible. And Tiger just seems to be playing the long game, the slow game. Obviously, he needs good health to perform, but he's never seemed panicked about what might be possible 5 years from now, let alone 9 days from now.
Well, wouldn't that be the perfect poetic closing of the circle here with Tiger? He doesn't have anything to prove to himself, certainly doesn't have anything to prove to us, but it would be great if he thinks he has something to prove to his son, and that's the motivation that keeps him out there, because he's not out there at Augusta today for anything other than a single-minded focus on the possibility of what he might do on Sunday of next week.
You surprised that we're talking about this today?
If you'd asked me that several months ago, I would say no, but a lot of players have seen Tiger out working pretty hard at Medalist over the last couple of months. I'm not surprised, but, you know, when are you never surprised by Tiger at this point and the Masters? I'm not surprised. I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
It would be a crushing disappointment if physically he decides that it's just too much stress on the body and he can't do it. And that's a decision I assume he'll clue people in on in the coming days. But it's just, we've got Tiger back at Augusta. In a way, that's something we never thought we would have. If you go back 14 months ago, when it looked a much more grim situation, we would never have thought we were having even this conversation.
I keep hearing John Cook's voice, you know, careful, careful, counting out Tiger Woods. I keep hearing Nota Begay's voice. I mean, Tiger Woods is a warrior. I mean, these are folks who have known him for 40 years in certain, you know, 30 years in some cases, and they continue to see Tiger Woods as someone who is the ultimate outlier in terms of how he plays this game, but also how he is able to come back time and time again and surprise us even on a sleepy Tuesday in golf.
You think Charlie's trash-talking him out there today?
Oh, you know he is. Part of the story, Tiger and Charlie kind of together again, but this time together at Augusta National. And who knows what it means for next week? A story we'll continue to follow as the hours unfold. Yeah, big week in the women's game as well. We're getting ready for the first major of the year out in California, the Chevron Championship, Mission Hills Country Club, Rancho Mirage. October 2021, you'll recall, the tournament secured that six-year sponsorship deal with Chevron that will increase the purse to $5 million this year. And then for next year, the event expected to move to Houston, ending a stay in Palm Springs that began with the tournament's debut in 1972. Let's take a look at those winners' major championships last year. Patty Tabatanikin at UCLA will join us in just a little bit. Yuka Sasa with that great win at the Olympic Club San Francisco. Nelly Korda, world number one last year, won that KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Minji Lee getting it done. And Anna Nordqvist winning the AIG Women's Open. Speaking of Yuka Sasa, last summer was her moment at the Olympic Club, defeating Nasa Hatoka in the third playoff hole to claim her first major title. Sasa matched 2008 winner NB Park, who also won this championship at the age of 19. And here's what she's done since that major: 15 starts. She's made 14 cuts, six top 10 finishes. That best finish, the third at the Gainbridge LPGA Boca Rio in January, continuing to show some fantastic form as we hear from the major championship winner.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I played here last year and, you know, made the cut and had some great memories. It feels good, really good to be back and, you know, playing the first major of the year.
You mentioned last year it was your first time playing in the event, tied for 50th. What did you learn about this golf course after seeing it for the first time last year that now you can use this year?
It wasn't actually my first time last year.
Oh, that's right. Did you play as an amateur?
I played the AJGA event.
Right.
So we played here on the last day and played with the, you know, Hall of Famer players. Obviously, golf courses are very difficult, you know, long rough, fast greens, and, you know, long par fives. So I definitely learned a lot. You know, being patient and be more mature inside the golf course. So, yeah, it was a very good experience.
Good. You coming here off a couple weeks off, at least here on the LPGA Tour, last event was a tie for 12th in Thailand. What'd you do during that break, and how do you feel right now as you head into the tournament?
I didn't really do anything. I just probably slept the whole week and really gave myself a good week off, and I came in early to, you know, practice here and get ready. Nothing really special.
Where were you during that week off? Were you at home or here in the States?
I was in Carlsbad.
Okay. Nice. You hung out here and got in Carlsbad, huh?
Yeah, I was at the Callaway.
All right.
Yeah.
Were you getting dialed in, getting some work done?
Yes. We worked hard.
Yeah, Yuka Saso won her first major last summer representing the Philippines, you'll recall. But at the start of this year, Saso officially chose Japanese citizenship and officially represents Japan now on the LPGA Tour. Quite the moment for Japan last April as then 17-year-old Tsubasa Kajitani defeated Emilia Migliaccio in a playoff to win the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It was a fantastic moment for her. Great duel, by the way, you'll recall, 1 year ago. We take a look at some Japanese golfers representing the country with some great pride and fantastic play. Recent years, some notable performances from 2021. You see Tsubasa there winning the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Hideki Matsuyama, that Masters title. Monet Inami won the silver medal, Tokyo Olympics. Keita Nakajima won the Asia Pacific Amateur to qualify for the 2022 Masters in Takumi. Kanaya saw him competing last week at the match play out in Austin, Texas. So for more on this week's Augusta National Women's Amateur, let's send it back to Steve Rakowski.
Damon, thanks so much. Pleased to be alongside Brentley Romine as we gear up for the third edition of this Augusta National Women's Amateur. And Brentley, we were excited when it was announced in 2018, the inaugural event a year later. What's your assessment of how quickly this event has grown in stature we're now in 2022?
Well, Berker, I think it's rare for an event in any sport to reach this kind of profile in just 3 years. I mean, how many other golf tournaments do we have so many players on social media sharing their invites? I mean, it's the Masters and the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's really a week of details. They treat the players like royalty, but the field is very stout as well. 41 of the top 50 in the Women's World Amateur Golf Ranking, including 9 of the top 10. Basically, to play, Berko, you have to be somebody. You have to have done something. And if you win, it might just change your life. I think it's no wonder that when I asked a coach how special is this event, he said, well, I took an informal poll of my players and asked them, what's one title you'd most like to win? All 8 of them said the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Yeah, it's happened quickly, and we expect it to get bigger and bigger in the years ahead. When we take a look at some of the favorites to keep an eye on this year, hard not to look at world number 2, Ingrid Lindblad of LSU, but why in particular is she very high on your list to contend come Saturday?
Yeah, she's the hottest player in women's college golf right now. Has won 3 out of her last 4 events, has made 26 career starts as an LSU Tiger, 21 of them she's finished in the top 10. I really think these are two courses that suit her game very well. She hits a high ball. She can really put a lot of spin on those low wedges. And if she putts well, I like her chances a lot. Last year, remember, she finished tied for 3rd, a shot out of that playoff. Had a really unfortunate 3-putt after hitting the green into at number 15. I talked to her head coach yesterday, Garrett Runyon, and he talked about how putting's been a huge emphasis for her. It's the first thing she does when she gets to the course. It's the last thing she does before she leaves. It's a lot like brushing your teeth, he said. You know, just because you did it today doesn't mean you don't have to do it tomorrow. She kind of struggles swinging a little in and out. She's trying to straighten out that putting stroke. And he also told me a great story last year about the practice round at Augusta National. She's in her head about what club she's going to hit on number 12, and he pulls her aside and says, Ingrid, just soak this all in. You're at Augusta National, Amen Corner. She tends to put a little bit too much pressure on herself, but make no mistake, she loves these big moments, and it's no surprise they call her Joe Burrow because she puts up crazy numbers and she knows how to win.
Yeah, certainly one of the most talented players in the field this week, as all 72, very worthy of making a return trip or at least an inaugural for some to this event. But someone who's going to tee it up for the third time, a teenager, Alexa Pano. Where is her level of motivation to change the outcome this go around for her?
Well, if we remember, she was a 3-time national finalist for the drive, chip, and putt, 2-time winner, but that success hasn't translated to this particular tournament. 2 starts, 2 missed cuts. She said while she relishes every opportunity she gets to play Augusta National, she's tired of showing up on Friday for the practice round, knowing that she's not going to be competing on Saturday. She enters this week in pretty good form. She's playing this season on the Epson Tour as an amateur to gain experience, top 10 on that tour season opener a few weeks ago. And she's also made some tweaks to her swing. Not anything too, you know, detailed, but she just wants to try to make her action more repeatable, more consistent. Talked with her this morning, and she's not thinking about if this could be her last Augusta National Women's Amateur or not. She's just focused, as she said, week by week, trying to treat this year just as she did the very first year she showed up. As she said, quote, it's always a once-in-a-lifetime thing to be able to play Augusta National. And, Berko, I think that's even more true if she ends up making it to Saturday.
We'll keep an eye on Pano and the rest. Brentley Romine, appreciate the news and notes. We'll continue to pick your brain over the course of the next few days. Damon, as I send it back to you guys in the studio.
All right, law firm of Burko and Brentley holding it down for us at Champions Retreat. How about after the break, joined by a UCLA Bruin defending champ at Mission Hills, Patty Tavitanikin. Take a look back at the past year and look ahead to her goals in her title defense.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And the new Pink Glide Forged Pro Wedges. Get fit today. And by Skechers Go Golf, comfort-driven styles worn by Billy Andre.
Back on Golf Today. Quite the Sunday for a 19-year-old Ataya Titikun, who won the JTBC Classic for her first career LPGA win. Carlsbad, California. Look at that smile. A lot of folks have been saying we've been seeing this player coming. And with the win, she became the sixth tie winner on the LPGA Tour, a list topped by Arya Jutanugarn. Big sister Moria, a couple wins as well. And you see that name? I say second from the bottom. Patty Tavitanikin, the UCLA Bruin. Her big moment 1 year ago on a Chamber of Commerce Sunday in California desert. Final round 68 to hold off Lydia Ko to win her major championship. And this is what she's done since that moment and that leap into Poppy's Pond. 20 starts, made 19 of 20 cuts, 9 top 10 finishes, a couple of T3s as well. And of course, was the rookie of the year. Right now, we're joined by this week's defending champ, Patty Tavitanikin of UCLA, live from Mission Hills. It's great to see you, Patty T. Life as a defending champ, what's the week been like in terms of, you know, Patty, we need you here, dinner, photo shoot, interview. How busy has it been?
It's actually been quite all right. Try my best to keep my schedule on track, but at the same time, give some other, you know, time for the media and the people as well, because I know you guys would want to see my face.
It's better than our face right now. A year ago, Patty, you were ranked 103rd in the world. Right now, you're 14th. How has your life in golf changed? What are the demands on your time that you didn't have a year ago? Or have you had to adapt your routine to get ready for tournaments in a way that you didn't have to before?
If anything, it's a lot of changes, but in a positive way. I feel like I am more confident going into each week and just knowing that I can compete out here. And the meter changed, everything changed in a good way. At the same time, the demand from media, from people, I try my best to accommodate everyone, but at the same time, I also gotta, you know, look after myself as well. And you know, whatever is best for me at the time, I will do it. But if it doesn't work out, then, you know, I really hope that they do understand that.
Well, nobody looked after themselves better than you 1 year ago. When you arrived to Mission Hills, how quickly did you feel like this golf course speaks to me? It fits my eye. I can thrive here.
I gotta look back to when I played here as an amateur, you know, played two times as an amateur, miscut the first time and got the low amateur award the second time. And, you know, just playing this course multiple times give me not, I wouldn't say it's an advantage, but a comfortable mindset walking into the course. And when everything just clicks, you know, golf, you find your momentum and you just keep going. And I think that's what I got it going last year, just that momentum and just really focused on what I was doing with the experiences I had playing. Last year was my fourth time playing. This is my fifth time playing. So I'm really comfortable with how the course is and, you know, seeing every shot really clearly.
Patty, you won three times in eight starts on what was then the Symetra Tour and got a Battlefield promotion to the LPGA Tour. Then you win a major very early in your career. You're still only 22 years old. Have you had to reset your goals or ambitions, or do you still have ambitions that you've always had since childhood that are still there to be accomplished?
Right after my win, you know, I was still I didn't know what was going on. I didn't really know what I did for a couple months there. But still, you know, I was playing well. I was confident on the golf course, and that obviously helped me had good finishes. But, you know, towards the end of last year, I didn't really have that drive to win. Every time I go out, I just want to, you know, kind of want to go home. But this year, I am back, and I'm enjoying traveling a lot more than last year because, you know, we can go out with COVID protocols. They lifted everything up. I'm more hungry this year, I would say. Even though I felt like my game was there at the start of the season, just the performance and the results weren't there for me. But I still believe and, you know, have high hopes on, you know, my development in this game and just moving forward each day.
Patty, I'm curious, $5 million purse this year, that's an increase of 60%. How much is that a talking point? Like, are you all in the locker room going, girl, you see all that money that's available this week?
It is a great thing for this tournament and for women's golf in general, just to raise that purse. What Chevron did was really amazing. And I think, if anything, all the girls just really want to play well even more because, you know, who doesn't want dough?
Well, it's, you know, it's been 20 years since we've seen someone win back-to-back here. That was Annika back in 2002. What do you fancy your chances of collecting that big bag of dough on Sunday evening?
My goal this week is not to play like I'm a defending champ. My goal this week is to play like, you know, this is my fifth time playing. I know the course. Just be comfortable out there and execute. I want to be as comfortable and confident as I can be. I don't want to focus on trying to win again, because if that were to be something that's going to happen, it's going to happen on Sunday. But, you know, the process is what mattered the most for me right now. And if it unfolds that way, then, you know, I'd be really happy.
I like that. Justin Thomas had a similar mindset. Nick Saban, the Bama coach at football, said, you're not defending anything, just go out and win another one in terms of the Players' Championship for him. Now, I'm curious, what's it like for you, Patty, to see a fellow countrywoman in Ataya Titikun make such a big impression at a young age, of course, winning last week outside San Diego?
It's amazing, you know. I feel like I'm just really glad to see another Thai player dominating out here on tour, because, if anything, that's really good for golf in Thailand. And to see the game grow in Thailand, you know, going back, I was back there last month, and to see it's growing, the fans came out to watch Hana, even though they were restricted of the amount of people. It was just, it's a good feeling. It's a warm feeling that I have, because way back, I was that girl that looked up to people on tour, Aria Moria. They were out here, one of the first to be out here and to be successful. It's just an amazing feeling. And, you know, Ataya is a really great player. We've seen it since she was young. She won the LET event back in Thailand when she was really young. And, you know, the talent's there. Just a matter of time when she was going to do it. And now she did it. I think she proved to everyone that, you know, she's going to be a dominant player.
The state of Thai golf is incredibly strong. And, Patty T, you're a big part of that. Best of luck this week. Hope you get that big bag of dough, as you called it. And we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
All right, the UCLA Bruin trying to win another Chevron this week. Your thoughts as we kind of get closer and closer to what's going to be a huge week. This is the first major championship of the year. It's a goodbye to Mission Hills. And we know that the players are excited. They're talking about the purse, yes, and they're also talking about saying goodbye to a great venue.
Yeah, it really does represent what has been the past of the LPGA Tour, and maybe gives you a sign of what's the future of the LPGA Tour. It's been an event that's been at Mission Hills for 50 years, and it's moving to an as yet unidentified venue in Houston. But what they played for back then and what they're playing for now is a vastly different sum of money. And I think that, to me, is the most positive sign that's going on in women's golf these days, is you see, you know, the US Open, Women's Open purse climbed to $10 million.
Yeah.
We've seen the AIG Women's British Open go up to almost $7 million. And when we had Molly Marcoux-Simon on earlier, we're talking about the general increase in the significant tournaments on that tour. The money is growing exponentially, and it's overdue. And I, you know, sometimes for that to happen, you have to sacrifice a few things along the way. and sacrificing Mission Hills to bring it closer to the title sponsor's home base in the Houston area is just a cost of doing business, really.
Yeah, Molly Marcuse-Simon saying that the players at the bottom of the money list should still be paid commensurate to their talent, that they can have a lifestyle commensurate with being a professional tour pro. Your thoughts about the increased purses, because we're seeing sponsors flock to the LPGA at this moment. So you're saying it's kind of worth it. You say goodbye to Mission Hills, but you are opening up opportunities for these women to have sponsors, to make more money, to get them closer to the PGA Tour. They may not get there. You know, who knows what the future holds in terms of that perspective, but just the importance of them having new business partners, new sponsors to kind of open up greater pathways for these players.
And sentimentality doesn't really pay the rent. And that's for old guys like us.
Yeah.
When you just saw Paddy Tavantanikut, who's 22 years old, Yuka Sasso, we mentioned earlier, who's 20 years old, they don't have the historical attachment to a place like Mission Hills that previous generations of players did, who kind of grew up there, who grew up watching people play there. And I don't think that attachment exists as much now. And frankly, if we're just changing venues, this tournament has had eight different sponsors over the years. The only thing that was really consistent in it was the venue. But if you want to move on, if you want to advance the amount of money that women are playing for in this game, if you want to elevate championships, sometimes you have to make concessions. And moving on from a single venue, to me, doesn't seem a particularly onerous concession given the advantages that are out there.
From Amy Alcott to Paddy Tavitanikut, I will miss the leap into Poppy's Pond, but I imagine new history will be made, as you mentioned, an as-named venue in Houston, Texas, a year from now. Our defending champ, speaking of which, Paddy Tavitanikut joined our Jim Bones McCott on playing lessons. I didn't know that. You can catch it tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf.
Well, it's been 13 years since we saw a champion repeat at the Valero Texas Open. Jordan Spieth is trying to break that streak this week. We'll talk about his chances of going back-to-back at TPC San Antonio. Stay with us.
Back on Golf Today, a little flashback to the 2021 Valero Texas Open. It's almost 4 years and 83 starts. It's Jordan Spieth's last PGA Tour win, or any win. For that matter, Jordan Spieth became a champion again, got those snazzy boots, cool trophy as well. Does well in Texas and had the smiles. It was all part of the process. How about Spieth versus Spieth, though? Kind of strokes gained entering the Masters last year off that win at Valero versus now. You see some improvement off the tee, but a fall off approaching the green, around the green, putting and total. So the strokes gained, not always the way to judge Jordan Spieth. He seems to kind of find a way to get the ball in the hole, but where does he kind of sit with our buddies at Points Bet? You know, where do those odds say? Well, they respect the resume for Jordan Spieth in that first major championship. Plus 1,400. The flat-footed tie with Ryder Cup buddies Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa, ahead of a fellow Masters champ in Dustin Johnson, and ahead of a man chasing the career Grand Slam in Rory McIlroy. So what do you make of Jordan Spieth? We're seeing him a little kind of finicky at the, you know, practice area, kind of doing some different things with his golf swing. Where do you see Jordan Spieth right now?
I think Scottie Scheffler is on line one to Points Bet right now, wondering why he's
where's he
behind Jordan Spieth in this, another UT guy. But I guess that proves the value of institutional knowledge at Augusta National. And it seems to be one of those places where as soon as guys head down Magnolia Lane, it sparks something in them. We've seen it over the years, even from old guys like Freddie Couples and Bernhard Langer, who will put themselves in the mix. But to me, Spieth these days is very much like Forrest Gump's Mama's Chocolates. You just don't know what you're getting on a given day. And if he's going to find something, he's going to find it in Texas. If you look at his record, even last year, after he won here at the Valero Texas Open, he also finished second in the Charles Schwab Championship. He was T9th in the Byron Nelson last year as well. So this state acts as something of an elixir for Jordan Spieth. And the problem is he seems to have cooled off from that hot period. He finished second to Colin Morikawa at Royal St. George's in the Open Championship. Since then, he's had 13 starts and he's only made one top 10 in those 13, which was his runner-up to Tom Hoagie at the AT&T at Pebble Beach. So he's very much kind of like the roller coasters you see around TPC San Antonio. There's a lot of highs, a lot of lows. What he does this week probably doesn't necessarily impact what he does next week.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen him go from nowhere to putting himself in the mix on Sunday afternoon at Augusta National on several occasions. But you got to think he's looking for something in his swing. Not necessarily the result, but the process of the swing is where he seems to be looking for something.
It's what Ben Crenshaw, fellow Texan, did in 1995. Came to Augusta National with no form and won a second green jacket. And I do think that I'll be watching Jordan Spieth along with the rest of us this week in San Antonio, but not necessarily what he does this week will tell me how he'll play next week. I love what you said, the institutional knowledge. Jordan Spieth learned at the knee of Ben Crenshaw and Carl Jackson in his early trips to the Masters. He was asking the right questions. He was playing practice rounds with the right people. He was studying the angles, knowing where to miss it, which is as important as knowing where to hit it at Augusta National. So I'll be fascinated to see how he plays this week, just because I'm fascinated to watch Jordan Spieth whenever he tees it up. But I do not think that how he plays this week will change my mind on what he might do next week.
And it might not even matter what he's done all season long. There's no strokes gained metric for intangibles. And that's really what Jordan Spieth has, and it's really what he has at Augusta National in particular. We saw that drop off in his strokes gained putting, where he's currently 141st on tour, and he was 45th last year at the Masters. That doesn't matter when Jordan Spieth steps onto the greens at Augusta National. You know, that's a place where a guy like that just seems to will the ball into the hole. The intangibles are what matter at Augusta National, and Jordan Spieth seems to be able to tap into that vein that Augusta National brings out in people more so than any of his peers right now.
Looking forward to the Masters next week. Also looking forward to the first round of the Valero Texas Open. That's going to be 4 p.m. Eastern time Thursday for that first round. When we come back, head back to Champions Retreat, where Steve Rakowski will be joined by the 2021 Augusta National Women's Amateur runner-up, Amelia Migliaccio. This marks a special week for the women's game. We get set for the third edition of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. 72 of the world's top female amateurs converge on Georgia for a chance at a final round date with Augusta National Golf Club. 12th-ranked amateur in the world, Amelia Migliaccio, will be making her third appearance in this event. In 2021, she shot 73-74 in the first two rounds at Champions Retreat and then followed with a 70 at Augusta National with five birdies in a round to force a playoff with Tsubasa Kajitani, who won with a par on the first extra hole to Migliaccio's bogey. Right now, she joins our own Steve Rakowski.
That she does. Damon, fresh off the golf course, practice round under her belt here at Champions Retreat. Amelia, always good to spend some time with you. And this is a week filled of excitement and a lot of challenges. And you had an extra challenge this morning on your left index finger. What in the world happened?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up on your first question. So was eating my breakfast in the hotel room, and I was cutting an apple, and then I cut a little bit of my finger too, but it's okay. It doesn't hurt when I play, so it's fine. Luckily, hopefully not too big of a deal.
All right, we got that out of the way. This is your third start in this event. What does it mean for you to receive that invitation and be back here yet again?
It means so much. I actually got an email before I received the invitation from UPS saying that you have a package from Augusta National coming soon. And even that just made me so excited. Just such a privilege to be here, and just everything about this event. They make you feel so special with all of the gifts, but also just the treatment in general. Like, it's so special to see just how much, you know, women's golf is just so promoted and elevated and cherished.
The memories of a year ago, Damon just talked about the opportunity to win, losing in a playoff. What do you look back on most fondly from 12 months ago?
I really look back on just that week with my mom. I mean, having her caddy, she actually was like, I think you should have an Augusta caddy. And then 6 holes into the practice round, I was like, can you caddy for me, please? Just like having that moment with her, I knew I would cherish that more than anything else. And yeah, it just really, you know, seeing her in that white jumpsuit just made me feel so happy and honored. And I really hope I'm there again.
How would you describe the relationship with your mother, who was a great college golfer at Arizona, and in the growth of your game, not only as a golfer, but as a young woman as well?
She's my best friend. We always spend so much time together. The golf course is great to spend time together because you're there for like 4.5-5 hours. But she's my coach. She's been my coach, you know, for pretty much my whole junior and amateur career. And, Yeah, she's just super positive and always supports me and my sister. So it's really special to have her as a mom.
You've been public about the anxiety that this game you love so much gave you at certain times. How have you been able to deal with that, overcome it, and sort of fall back in love with this game that's meant so much to you?
Yeah, I mean, I took a kind of a year off of competition, so I haven't played a lot of tournaments, and then kind of working on the golf side and being sort of a spectator of the action, I really just saw how much of a privilege it was to compete and how it's so special, like, to be able to do something like that, and kind of not having that adrenaline going, I started to miss it a lot. Like, there's nothing, you know, you can get nerves and be anxious, but then you also get you make the putts and you hit the good shots, and that's kind of the feeling that you want and the feeling that I realize I crave all the time. So I'm really excited, this being, you know, my first tournament in a few months, and I'm excited to see what happens.
How much did that play into the fact that you're going to head back to Wake Forest in the fall for an additional year due to COVID?
Well, it pretty much was the reason why I wanted to go back, because at first I thought I was done, but then I was like, well, I'm not going to turn professional and I really like amateur golf. And then the easy answer was using my extra year of eligibility to play again on the team. And I love team golf and being with my teammates and my coaches. So it was an easy answer. And Kim and Ryan were both so excited when I sort of expressed that I wanted to play again.
And we've been keeping you busy, working for us at Golf Channel, doing some college and amateur golf. What's that experience been like for you in relation to you being back out on the golf course and maybe seeing things from a different perspective?
Yeah, it's been so fun. I mean, I love traveling and kind of going from place to place, so that's very similar to working for Golf Channel. But also just being on the reporting side and kind of being the role of providing insight to kind of players' mindset, course strategy. I feel that my course strategy is better. Like, I feel I have better course management and kind of understand things a little better. And also, I see all the golf. So you kind of, it puts in perspective that on TV, they only show the good shots, but there's a lot of average shots happening, but it's the people that can kind of keep it all together, then they end up winning the tournament.
We started with a finger on the left hand. I want to say congratulations, newly engaged. All the best to you two moving forward, and all the best this week. Always good to catch up with you.
Thank you so much, Berko.